and tries to persuade David Suchet to revisit a familiar role. Whatever next is next.
On BBC iPlayer.
Everyone is a murderer. You just have to meet the right person.
From the makers of Sherlock and Dracula, starring David Tennant and Stanley Tucci.
Most of the time, what happens to people is other people.
There's no forgiveness without confessing your sins first.
I think in the end, and with regret, I'm sure, you're going to kill me.
Inside Man.
Welcome to the inside.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Now on Radio 4, Miles Jupp stars as Miles Jupp in a sketch show about the trials and tribulations of being Miles Jupp. This week, his guests include Julia Davis, Jocelyn G. Essien and Vicky Pepperdine. Whatever next?
Hello, I'm Miles Jupp. Whatever next? In the next half hour, money-saving expert Martin Lewis explains how he saved a fortune by never buying oven gloves. A top TV funny man explains how his controversial beliefs about Earth's fossil record cost him a spot on Strictly. And we ask meteorologists to cut the crap and tell us why the hell we have to have thunder. All this and more on the show that looks at Britain and mutters, whatever next? Hello and welcome to Whatever Next, already being described everywhere as the show that... Now, social mobility is one of those buzz phrases at the moment, isn't it? Certainly one I myself hear uncomfortably often, usually in the context of speeches that people make to me, ending with the words, and this is why you're part of the problem. In fact, those very words were spoken to me only this morning by the BBC's Director General, Henman, possibly? Curry, as he and I were enjoying an otherwise good-humoured game of Russian roulette. But now that the dust has settled, I realise that I actually want to find out more about the whole social mobility issue, and so I've invited along the BBC's social mobility czar, Guy Carrickter, to explain it all to us. Hello, Guy.
Hello, Miles. Before we start, could I just add in italics that I'd prefer not to be described as the social mobility czar?
But it is the job title on your lanyard.
You can't believe everything you read.
Well, I don't. I mean, I read a lot of novels, for instance. Although that's fiction. Sebastian Foulkes and stuff. Not really suggesting that.
Can I interrupt you there?
Do you know what? I would love that.
About this whole czar thing. When we're talking about social mobility, we need to steer clear of unhelpful language.
But teats?
Would be a good example. I don't like being described as some sort of czar because it implies some sort of privilege. But in fact, I built my career at the BBC, this wonderful institution.
Certainly an institution.
It's a wonderful institution.
I should point out that all views expressed by Guy on this programme are his own views and not necessarily those of the BBC.
I'm literally here to represent the views of the BBC.
Yeah, well, let's get back to talking about how you're not a czar.
And as I was saying, I got where I am today entirely through hard work, not through being a member of the Russian royal family, which, needless to say, I'm not.
Guy, I'm going to press you. Social mobility, why is it important?
Well, can I offer you an analogy, Miles?
Do you know what? I would be heartbroken if you didn't.
Society should be like a pint of Guinness.
Unpleasant in summer?
No. In a pint of Guinness, there are bubbles going upwards and bubbles going downwards. That shows you everything's functioning properly. And it's the same with society. Society should have people rapidly rising up from below.
Adele?
And people who were once high up gradually sinking down.
Prince Andrew?
That way, just like your pint of Guinness, you've got a properly functioning society.
And in both cases at the top, a thick layer of white. I'm a little surprised that's how you...
You're probably best not to push these analogies too far.
Well, not this one, certainly. I mean, obviously, it's important for the BBC, this social mobility, because otherwise all you'd be left with is a build-up of entirely useless but incredibly posh people, wouldn't you? And we've already got one moral maze. But may I ask, why were you personally given this job?
Well, the BBC isn't about who you know. It's about results. The Director General wanted someone who knows what it's like to come from a less privileged background.
Do you come from a less privileged background?
Yes, I think so. My mother may have run the Royal Opera House, but only for a relatively short time. And she didn't even programme it that excitingly. And we spent a good chunk of my childhood in one of the less pleasant parts of Belgravia. So that's why I can look the man in the street in the eye and say, I'm just like you. Only for largely bureaucratic reasons, I have to be paid around £300,000 a year more.
Is there a particular message you'd like to send to people who are thinking a career in the BBC isn't for them?
It's never too late to start learning Latin.
Absolute amateur.
Well, the programme's got off to nothing less than a start, so just time to look ahead to what's coming up this weekend. I'll be having a minor accident involving a cold frame that will lead to a junior doctor having to pick fragments of glass out of my buttocks with a hot needle again, while telling me that they never thought I was the right fit for the news quiz, while you might like to enjoy the new podcast, Who Would You Like to Have a Pint With?
Who Would You Like to Have a Pint With? The podcast about who you'd like to have a pint with.
Hello, I'm Sean Walsh, and this is Who Would You Like to Have a Pint With? The show where we get a famous person on and ask them who they'd like to have a pint with. Joining us around the wobbly wooden table today is Miles Jupp. Miles, who would you like to have a pint with?
Anyone, not fussy.
Yeah, but...
Not Matthew Paris after last time, but otherwise, yeah, just... don't mind.
Yeah, but the point of this, though, is to hear who you'd most like to have a pint with.
It's just nice to meet new people. Surprise me.
No, that's not... No, you choose who you'd like to have a pint with.
We could have a pint, you and me. That'd be all right.
No, it could be anyone. Not from today or anyone from history, dead or alive.
How would that work?
What?
Well, you can't have it. I mean, they'd be dead.
That doesn't matter.
So, but then how are you arranging it?
No. Right, sorry. If we...
Also, does it have to be tonight? Because I'm actually on quite powerful antibiotics at the moment, and sometimes I can go a bit sort of doolally if I have more than four.
No, there is no actual pint. It's just us talking about having a pint. It's imaginary.
Is this for a podcast?
Yes.
Are you paying for this all yourself?
Well, the BBC funds it.
The BBC funds podcasts?
Yes.
Why?
No one knows. Let's go to a break with something from our podcast sponsors, the left-leaning newspaper.
Left-leaning newspaper. If you don't buy it, it won't be the left-leaning newspaper. Please buy the left-leaning newspaper.
Back from our break, and I think I have now managed to explain to Miles the idea behind our show. Who would you like to have a pint with?
Well, I think you're putting the blame on me, Sean. It's actually your fault for coming up with such a complicated premise.
Miles, who would you like to have a pint with?
I would need to think about it.
OK, well, I'll just quickly go through some messages from you Wazzix in the podcast pub.
Real?
Imaginary. Gordon Loves Sausage says he'd most like to have a pint of Tetley's with J. Edgar Hoover. Bella Lester says she'd have a pint of London Pride with Malala. And Yum Biscuit 69, oops, naughty, says she'll have a Bacardi Breezer poured into a pint glass topped up with vodka and keep it to herself. Miles? Who would you like to have a pint with?
OK, I'm going to go for either Kim Kardashian or Pope Benedict, but for very different reasons.
Yes.
And that's an either-or. I don't want them both turning up. They would not get on. Or maybe they would, and I'd feel left out. I mean, no point going to a pub just to feel lonely, is there? Although I have seen it done.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it?
Who would you like to have a pint with?
Well, while you were all experiencing that, I've been going through some of the new books out there. This one caught my eye like a carelessly thrown paper aeroplane. It's 1-2-1-2 Clause 4. Former leaders of the Labour Party recall their lives in song. Ed Miliband explains how Wigfield's Saturday night always brings back the heady anything-goes atmosphere of Gordon Brown's Treasury. Jeremy Corbyn explains why Goldfinger could have been written about him. Tony Blair talks a lot about the Beatles, so you can probably skip those 200 pages, while with the help of renowned mystic psychic Sally, Ramsay MacDonald reveals his fondness for the JCB song by Niz Loppy. The book contains an unexpectedly profane foreword from Michaela Strachan, angrily and some would say not entirely pertinently, describing the damage done to the Manchester rave scene by organised crime.
Miles, I just want to say, and I think I'm speaking for everyone at the publishers, when I say we're really blown away by your new novel.
Yeah?
What is it?
Well, that is the big question. What is it? And once I've worked it out, how can I possibly bear to write it? Crack those two. You've really got something on your hands.
Mm. And do you have any ideas?
I had one thought.
Brilliant. I'm all ears.
Yeah, you are a bit. Is that a posh thing? Or?
Oh, it just runs in the family.
Right. So, I was thinking, they always say, oh, write what you know.
They do?
Yeah, so I thought it could be a novel about a man.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that it, or...?
Well, a man who's writing a novel.
A novel about a man who's writing a novel.
Yeah, and he's not sure...
Not sure about what?
Not sure whether he should be writing a novel.
Oh, Yeah. So your idea is to write a novel about a man who's not sure if he should be writing a novel.
Well, I just think if I wrote that, it would, you know, really be coming from the heart.
Mm. So what happens in the book?
Well, stuff like this.
He'd go and see his publisher.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, he'd spend a bit of time describing the furniture in the room. I can tell you that for nothing. You know how the whole novel thing works. I mean, have you read any Sebastian Fuchs?
What would the publisher be like?
Oh, God, I mean, just horrendous. I mean, I would use that character to let out a lot of anger. I think people would like that. And by people, I mean me. But the book would be made up of all the stuff that happens when you're not sure you should be writing a novel.
Right.
Answering emails, experiencing a sudden urge to tidy. Actually recently bought online a little copper brush for getting deep-seated dirt out of carpets, rugs. I'm thinking a good 100 pages would probably describe me staring out of the window thinking about how old I feel.
I want to be clear that I like this. I don't want you to think for one second that I'm actually appalled by it.
No, sure. I'm thinking, you know, like pretty much anything, it could probably make a great television series.
Or radio?
No. No one wants to make a radio series. I just think this book, it could probably be adapted into a television series about a man who's not sure whether he should be making a television series.
And would you be in it?
No. But, I mean, I'd watch it. I mean, depending on when it's on, I suppose.
Just time now for a quick look at what's on the schedules for Radio 4 Extra tonight. First up, classic sitcom. Some people say it's dated a bit. I have to say, of all the things to hold against it, that's the least of its worries. Very Plain Girls, a sitcom set in the all-female staff of a furniture smoothing service. It's a dreadful title, an appalling premise, and, of course, famously a great favourite with Kenny Dalglish. Lest we forget, one of the very few sitcoms made by the BBC where the entire creative team has subsequently been imprisoned. Incidentally, the creative team behind Very Plain Girls will be brought back together in this week's episode of The Reunion, describing the pivotal roles they played in the 1990s Strange Way riot. After that, there's panel show fun aplenty, it says here, with the classic edition of No More For Me, That's Plenty, in which a carefully picked selection of celebrity guests are asked to guess how much of a given liquid they would be able to comfortably imbibe before the need for a medical intervention. In tonight's episode, Dame Edith Evans confidently asserts that she could take on a gallon of beef stock and still, in her words, come up smelling of roses, while Everton great Dixie Dean proudly states he could swallow enough custard to fill a Hillman imp, and that he's done it before. If you don't believe it, ask his brother. In the chair, as ever, is Harold Pinter, who later described it as the best thing he's ever done. Now, it's always important to be ready to accept change. I recently changed my agent. I've been with Clara for a number of years, been through a lot together. Saw her through a divorce and a long period of carpal tunnel syndrome caused by repeatedly writing to casting directors asking them to change their mind about my suitability for their film. Anyway, quite without any action on my part, I'm now with a chap called Big Shoes, who has unexpectedly taken over Clara's clients, her phone, and most of the unsecured items of value in her maisonette. Not everyone's cup of tea, but what can I say? We just click.
What?
Sorry, is this a bad time?
Hang on, Eric, your sugar tits. That's all right, mate. I'm just swatting a car.
Oh, I love all this agenting jargon. I was going to ask, are you on permanent contract now, or are you still on probation?
What do you know about my probation?
I've talked out of turn.
Yeah, right, listen. I had someone ringing up asking about you. Now, I told him I didn't know you, I'd never heard of you, he couldn't get you through me.
Yeah, possibly not ideal behaviour for an agent.
Yeah, well, then email me. How do you feel about presenting an awards do?
Oh, is it the BAFTAs?
Yeah, kind of. It says here, it's a chance to reward star performers and allow everyone to let their hair down at the end of a difficult 12 months.
Yeah, but Big Shoes, who's it for?
It's the DDDDDUs.
The DDDDDDUs?
Yeah, the Durham Division Dangerous Dogs Discipline Unit.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, apparently Austin Healey did it last year. He had a great time. He really enjoyed himself, it says. It actually had to beg him to leave.
Any more information?
Well, it's about dealing with the most difficult specimens, apparently. Atmosphere of trust and firmness, yeah, blah, 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 yeah, foam rubber matting, yeah, blah, 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 yeah, facial protective grill, yeah, blah, blah, 1 in 7 deaths.
Yeah, it seems like the usual sort of guff. So I'm giving awards to people who handle dangerous dogs.
Oh, yeah, they can definitely handle them, yeah, that much has been promised, yeah. Well, verbally. Is your tetanus up to date?
Yeah, my hot needle doctor keeps me topped up.
Right, good, right, because the great thing about this awards do is they will be bringing the dogs along too. That's a bit of fun in the evening, doesn't it? You know?
Well, certainly marks it out from all the other divisional dangerous dogs awards do's.
Well, it shouldn't be a problem for you. You've got quite a kind voice.
Yeah, is there a dress code?
Yeah, there was. It was something there. Yeah, oh yeah, right. How thick is your thickest pair of trousers?
I've got some quite sturdy canvas.
Right, best to remove all meat from the pockets before you get there.
Well, just time for that point in the show where I sigh deeply, stare into the middle distance and say,
I think we should check in on the progress of our ever-popular funny noise competition. This is where I play you the noise made by an everyday inanimate object. Could be a washing machine, a lawnmower, the chairman of the Conservative Party. And you have to guess what it is. So here is this week's funny noise. So there we go. And we've had a few guesses landing in the inbox already, like raw eggs on a front drive. Tony from Bishop's Injunction says, is it your arse? He's written that twice, the second time in capitals. Is it your arse? Nice try, Tony. It's no to both. Claire from Tatterworth says, is it the bubbling sense of indignation we all feel at the state of provision for those with disabilities after 12 years of Tory rule? No, afraid not, Claire. Arguably colder than Tony. Oh, and there's one from Michael in the Sea, who says, I remember the early summer when the air was charged with promise, strawberries and the music of Belle and Sebastian. I remember lying lazily in the memories of the night before as you'd rise from the simple bed and sheets made sweaty by our anxious, needy lovemaking in order to search for your nasal spray. And then later in the Pitt Rivers Museum, the tears that choked your attempts to explain and mine to understand, the need to run and not to escape each other, but to outpace a future whose revenge would arrive at unstinting, shocking length. Yeah, well, thanks for playing, Michael. Very close. The answer is, in fact, an espresso machine. So the prize money rolls over, meaning next week's jackpot will be a whopping £2.
Miles, come in. Are you all right?
Martha, thank you for seeing me. I'm so grateful.
Well, you said it was urgent.
Well, a crisis, really. I didn't know where else to turn. I know it's short notice.
It's fine. I don't normally see patients on a Wednesday afternoon, but if it's a crisis... Do you want to tell me what happened?
I was in the queue at the cafe and I was going to order an Americano and I looked in my pocket, but I didn't have my wallet.
You couldn't pay for your coffee.
I know it's possible to do with your smartphone, but someone told me if you do that, then Steve Jobs can see how much you've got in your eyes, sir.
I think Steve Jobs is dead, Miles.
Yes, I imagine that's what he'd like you to think.
So when you found you had no money, you felt panic, maybe a lot of doubt and worry that the universe was sending you a message that you didn't deserve a coffee.
Well, possibly. I was mainly thinking, how am I going to fill the afternoon now?
Well, we've talked before about your feelings of isolation.
Well, exactly. I'm glad you brought those up. That's how I'm feeling this afternoon. Isolated, cut off.
Outside of society.
Outside, definitely.
Unable to get where you need to be.
Yeah, locked out.
You feel like you're locked out.
I am locked out.
Well, you believe you're locked out.
No, I am locked out.
It's a belief that's very strong, isn't it? The belief that you're locked out.
Pretty hard to shift, what with being locked out.
Can you remember when you started to feel locked out?
I would say you go back over these things, it's hard to be sure, but pretty much it started when I locked myself out.
You imagine you locked yourself out, and this feeling of personal responsibility is maybe almost as painful as the locking out itself.
Feasibly.
I think together we could work through these feelings. I mean, it may take time, but...
OK, well, I mean, let's not go mad. My wife will be back from the school run in a bit. That should sort it.
Sort it?
The locked out thing. I mean, she's got keys. It's just that mine are in my wallet. I thought, not the end of the world, go get a coffee. Of course, no cash. Bad news on all sides, really, like the sort of thing Hitler went through after Stalingrad. But I thought Martha lives locally, could go round, have a cup of tea, delve into my psyche. You know, that'd pass the time.
I agreed to meet with you because you said it was a crisis.
Well, yes. 45 minutes to kill. Can't spend all that time browsing for waders and millets. Chap in there is only too happy to tell you that it isn't a library. You seem annoyed about something, Martha. I might not be the best person for the job, but would you perhaps like to talk about it? Well, just time for a quick look at what's coming up on Radio 4 this week, apart from the usual mid-morning discussion of whether home security cameras are a waste of money, followed by a play about Ireland. Tomorrow night sees another half-hour of hilarity from the lads in Kit and Caboodle. That's K-I-T-T-E-N... Kit and Caboodle. Yeah, it doesn't work on radio. I can tell you there are a bunch of absolute nutters, but they all got into Cambridge, so clearly they know when to switch it on and off. Now, if you're listening to this week's show, keep your ears peeled. Actually, don't. That sounds abhorrent. Anyway, you might be able to spot a little cameo from yours truly. We took our behind-the-scenes tape recorder and recorded some action behind the scenes when we went behind the scenes earlier this week. Let's hear what happened behind the scenes.
It's Miles! Milo, the milester, Slobodan Miles Osovich.
Hello, it's Barnaby, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for coming to help us out with some top-draw sketch comedy.
No, thanks for having me. Thanks a million.
What?
Sorry?
Oh, I thought you were talking to me. My name's Maximilian.
Oh, right. Well, Very happy to be here. I mean, I assumed we'd be meeting at Broadcasting House.
Oh, right.
I was a bit confused when the agent said, actually, they said, can you meet them in a Cessna C208B supervan flying at an altitude of 14,000 feet?
Yeah, we're wanting to give the new series a bit of a twist.
Right.
We had some discussions with Radio 4, doing more of our top draw sketch comedy, and they had mixed feelings.
Yes. Never again. The woman kept shouting.
But we said, you know, let's move the whole thing on, do something different.
And we said, how about we record the whole of the next series while skydiving out of a light aircraft?
Then she got very interested.
We said we'd go on a course and learn how to do it.
She said, don't bother.
She honestly thought that would spoil things.
I've got to say, none of this had been made fully clear to me.
That's why you've got a parachute on your back.
I thought that was the catered lunch. Look, I'm not sure about this. I mean, I don't want to be Mr. Doesn't Want to Jump Out of a Plane.
Scripts out!
Are there any instructions?
Well, just pull the dangly thing and get to a punchline. Chops away!
Oh, Christ! Christ!
Hello, Julian. How have you been?
What?
The sketch, Miles!
Hello, Julian. How have you been?
Yes! Fine, Dick! You?
Bit worried, to be honest. We call ourselves the Famous Five, but I'm not sure we're as famous as we used to be.
Miles?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've just never seen Hertfordshire from this angle before. They do say everyone's famous for 15 minutes.
And 15 is a multiple of 5.
I'm sorry, I've been sick! Isn't it amazing how it all blows away like that? Yes, it is a worry! What do you think, Timmy?
Wolf! Watch out for the geese!
Well, don't worry, listeners, I'm still in one piece and it all ended up making for a great programme. My apologies to the RSPB.
Now, just time for our regular feature, Pick of Earlier Today. And if you were listening to Six Music earlier today, perhaps because you're a member of Elbow and you're trying to remember how your own songs go, you might have heard me narrating a documentary about the Scottish indie scene, reflecting my passionate, long-held interest in the subject and the fact that Stuart McConey was unavailable. Anyone familiar with the Glasgow independent music scene will need no introduction to the most influential band of the 80s and 90s, Mind Your Bum Leroy.
Someone once said, all you need to make a great band is three chords and some attitude. What Mind Your Bum Leroy showed is you don't need three chords, you don't actually need two chords, you don't even need a chord. Or the attitude.
Music journalist Tom Scottish.
Where's Stuart McConey?
He couldn't make it. All true fans can name the classic lineup of Mind Your Bum Leroy. Alan Allenson, vocals and oboe, Julia Williams, embolism, mandolin and part-time interior decoration, Brett DeBrett, bass motives, and on percussion, Jerry McYacht Disaster. But for those true fans, the appeal of the band remained a closely guarded secret.
Someone said to me, I've not heard of this band. Can you name me one of their songs? I said, no. They said, go on, name me one of their songs. I said, no. I said, no. They said, just name me one of their songs. Will you not name me one of their songs? Please name me one of their songs. I said, no. It went on longer than that, but you get the gist of the conversation.
Veteran DJ Alison Oliphant Flapjack. Mind Your Bum Leroy emerged out of the shadows of punk, then re-entered the shadows of punk for a few more years after they'd realised they'd emerged out of the shadows of punk too early.
Everyone back then was using synthesizers. They were quite radical in not using synthesizers, or guitars, or singing. They also really didn't like drums.
In so many ways, Mind Your Bum Leroy were ahead of their time. Anticipating the decreased revenue streams to come from recorded music, they took the far-sighted decision never to release any albums or singles.
Obviously, not being able to buy anything by the band fundamentally limited their commercial appeal, but it meant they could concentrate on their live work. The problem there was that they never played any gigs.
What you have to realise is at the heart of Mind Your Bum Leroy was the relationship between Alan and Julia.
The two founder members.
Yeah. It was very passionate and all-consuming. And while it lit a fire under the band's creativity, it also, I think, sowed the seeds of their ultimate destruction.
Alan and Julia's relationship was critical to the band, but it wasn't a healthy relationship. It was a relationship that had problems from the start.
Why was that?
Well, I think one of the biggest problems with their relationship would have had to have been that they never actually met.
Some people think that Mind Your Bum Leroy would have been fine if Alan and Julia had actually met, but I don't know. I mean, for that to have happened, either of them had to have been born in the first place.
But, Alison, like me, you're still a fan.
Absolutely, 100%. They may not have existed, but they've never let me down. Put it this way, just imagine what you two would have been like if they'd never actually existed.
It's an appetising thought.
It really is.
So, did they just put Stuart McQueenie's voice on later? Or...
Quiet, please. One, two, three, four! Well, the sight of Time's loss of all bowel function tells me we've come to the end of another week's show, so just time for a quick look forward to next week's complaints. Roy from Plaster will be bombarding the feedback programme with a lengthy protest about this show's, his words, sheer inaudibility. He will then go on to describe this issue as similar to those he's experienced with other shows, indeed with all of the output of this and any other stations, not just on this network, but across all networks and indeed frequencies. Reading between these yet-to-be-written lines, we may eventually ask whether Roy from Plasto simply needs to turn up the volume on his radio, or whether what he's switching on and off is in fact a radio at all. Janet from Musselboro will email in to say that she'd love to listen to the radio more often, but frankly simply doesn't have the time, as she's far too busy spending most of her waking hours on local Facebook groups describing just how little time she has. Janet is, of course, retired. While Deborah from Seahouses will daub a local bus stop with an extensive mural conveying a great deal of anger towards me, as well as an inaccurate summation of what my feelings are towards the Pope.
Oh, and a quick public health warning. Whatever Next was presented by me, Miles Jupp, with further vocal contributions vouchsafed, I can't put it another way, though I've been advised that I should, by Julia Davis, Justin Edwards, Philip Fox, Jocelyn G. Essien, Dominic Moore, Vicky Pepperdine, Kyle Smith-Bino, Diana Speed, and Sean Walsh. It was unavoidably written by James Kettle and myself, script edited to within an inch of its very life by Graham Garden, and produced in such a way as to render her responsible in a court of law by Victoria Lloyd. It was, and indeed continues to be, a random production for BBC Radio 4.
Many of us in this world are ordinary, but some of us are heroes. Paramedics, firefighters, Radio 4 continuity announcers. Mainly Radio 4 continuity announcers. But all of these brave men and women do their jobs while battling with a terrible affliction. They all suffer from sideways eyes.
Now, Steve Punt and Hugh Dennis with a sideways look.
Coming up next on Radio 4, Hugh Dennis and Steve Punt take a sideways look.
And now, with a sideways look at the world of music.
With a sideways look at the week. It's the News Quiz.
Radio 4, Miles Jupp, with a sideways look.
And now, with a sideways look at the world of degloving accidents.
Every time a new continuity announcer joins Radio 4, their eye sockets are forcibly removed and reset at an angle of 90 degrees from their original position. Why? Well, it's all thanks to the unique way the BBC is funded. Ooh, sorry, can you excuse me for a moment? Oh, right. Was funded. The only answer is to give all you can. I'm not talking about money. What these people really need are adjectives.
Miles will be back at the same amazing and beautiful time next week. This episode and other surprising and astounding comedy can be found on BBC Sounds. Leonard is feeling